Welcome to Shout Out, out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to a spooktacular Shout Out.
He's horrible, Andy. And I'm spooky Steffi. And today on the show, horoscopes.
Who's Deborah Okama? Nope, I have no idea either, but she's got your stars.
Well, we do. We've heard of her before. And do you remember how scary Hellraiser was in the 80s?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I speak to Nick Vince about his new Blu-ray. It's out today, called I Am Monsters.
All today, right here on Shoutout.
Halloween.
Hello, Halloween jingles. Halloween. I like the Halloween jingles. They're very Halloweeny.
Yeah.
Well, I like the jingles. The Halloween jingles. They're very Halloweeny. I like it.
We need to record that one and play it back to you in a year's time.
You know what? These Halloween jingles are very Halloweeny.
Do you think when we get to Christmas, you say, I like these Christmas jingles? They're very Christmassy.
If nothing else.
Oh my God, what is that leering face at the. Oh, it's J.K. Rowling. Sorry.
No, sorry, it's just Steph.
Oh dear, it's starting already. So, right, come on, who is Deborah Okama?
Deborah Okama, met Deborah Okama during COVID when Saturday Afternoon was running on BCFM Radio, Wave Radio, and Trans Radio UK. And she became an integral part of the show, doing the star signs each week. So it was a 3-hour show, so we have to have a filler. So filler she became.
Okay. Does Deborah know that she was a filler?
No. No, and she doesn't. The thing is, usually her normal abode is underneath the Mersey, as you find out from the intro.
She's got a very interesting
But she's
accent.
On her Halloween halls, so she's in her holiday
Every
home
year,
in, Salem, Massachusetts.
Where else would she be?
Uh-huh. Just outside of Boston, if you're wondering.
Well, I think we've got a two-parter with all your hocus pocusy stars.
Hocus pocusy pocusing.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
So, shall we have a listen?
All right.
Whether you're rich or parking cars, your fate is written in the stars. You don't want to look like a dope, so please listen close for your horoscope.
And now, live from her latest paranormal investigation at an 18th century torture chamber beneath the River Mersey, we present the world's top psychic medium, Deborah Okama.
Hello, listeners. For those of you who don't know who I am Deborah Okama, and I am bringing you some special spooky season horoscopes all the way from Salem. Halloween is a time to embrace our spooky selves, get dressed up, carve some pumpkins, munch on some tasty treats, and relax with your favourite scary movie. And, as terrifying as some of them are, it can be hard to deny Pennywise's charismatic smile, not-so-subtle dress sense, and his bold and dramatic flair. All right there, Leos. Or Michael Myers' feistiness and air of mystery. If you've ever felt seen by a horror movie icon, you may find the reason written in the stars. So for a good helping of spooky fun, I have matched you up with 12 classic horror movie monsters. Let's get cracking. And first of course it is you, Virgo, and I'm sorry about this, but yeah, you're Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. I ate a liverwurst and fava beans and a nice Chianti. Virgo, you're known for your sass and your class, those intense analytical skills and attention to detail. You're the most health-conscious sign, sticking to organic and local delicacies. So what I'm seeing here is, well, an affinity to someone who is a fan of cannibalism. Sorry about that. But you are rather obsessed with how much protein you get in your diet and very partial to a fine wine. Despite Annabelle's horrifying crimes, he does maintain a chilling level head throughout his interactions with Clarice, and just like you, he cannot turn off his brain, has a pronounced intelligence and a meticulousness to pull it all off at the end. However, try to be a little less intense this month, eh? You're starting to scare people with those references to the lambs because nobody can hear them other than you. Aquarius, you're Frankenstein's monster. Oh yeah, an experiment gone wrong by one Victor Frankenstein. The monster is somewhat misunderstood. Like you, Aquarius, this outwardly grotesque creature can be sensitive and nurturing to those around him. I'm not calling you grotesque, of course. Calm down. Just like you, he can run to the defensive because he's super self-protective and rather emo. So if you're pushed, you snap. And those around you will be in for a lot of trouble. Spend some time this week trying to be a little more zen. Taurus, the blob. Oh, sorry. The blob crash lands on our planet Earth with one objective: to cuddle. The moment it arrives, the blob just wants to envelop every living thing inside. The typical Taurus seeks to be surrounded by lots and lots of comforting things, and that's precisely what the blob's all about. Consuming as many warm bodies as possible. Creepy. Just like you, maybe a little bit, because he's his own body, insofar as their body is own for the shrieking folk of a small town America. He's about enveloping the world in this ooey, ooey, gooey embrace. Like you, it's stubborn and won't take no for an answer. A door's in the way, no problem. The blob will ooze right under it. An unsuspecting victim doing the dishes, no big deal. The blob will squeeze through the pipes to get a good meal. One set in motion, nothing can stop the stubborn blob. Or a Taurus. Pisces. Jack Torrance from The Shining. All work and no play makes Jake. Jake? Who's Jake? Makes Jack a dull boy. Sorry, all the Jakes out there. You are impulsive, passionate people who follow whatever their most urgent instinct is at that moment. You love excitement and doing fun activities like, you know, wintering in a hotel in the mountains. In The Shining, Jack switches from sweet father to lunatic pretty damn quick. You're both leaders, though, who know how to command a room and make an entrance. And here's Johnny. It's a pretty good one. Plus, have you ever seen the wild look in a Pisces' eyes when they're excited about something, let alone the dramatic eyebrow? Most of Jack Nicholson's acting is just him balancing his inner fire, just like you. Aries, it's Chucky. Sorry, not sorry. You're both rather hot-headed, which can lead to intense wobblers. In short, Charles Array is a typical Aries. You're proud, you're impulsive, and absolutely do not plan ahead. And that's exactly the kind of energy you'd expect from a killer who magically transfers their soul into a doll while bleeding out in a toy store. It's so wild, it made me cackle there. What are the consequences of the ritual? Are there rules to follow? Will Charles Array's murderous conscience be trapped in this pint-sized plastic vessel forever? Those are exactly the kind of forward-thinking details Chucky doesn't have time for. You Aries, do what you want and in your own way, throwing yourselves at the world without fear or trepidation. And Chucky's a lot of things. He's irritable, he's wisecracking, and one heck of a showboater. A word of warning, if you see an actual mean-looking red-headed doll chasing you down the street, cover your ears and run like Forrest Gump. Gemini, Freddy Krueger, charismatic, quick-witted, could talk to a brick wall should the need arise. Sounds like Freddy Krueger. Gemini, the wise-cracking villain of the A Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, is a one-man party. Other villains may be satisfied with a simple machete, but for Freddy, every moment is an opportunity to put on a show. And with the ability to enter dreams, a Gemini like Freddy can really let his creativity and diverse interests shine. What's more mercurial than a shape-shifting dream demon? Nothing, that's what. Like many Geminis, Freddy uses humour as a crutch, and clearly he's having the time of his life. Coming up with all manner of deranged ways of carrying on his spooky legacy from beyond the grave.
The Shout Out Podcast.
When I was discussing this show with Clive Barker, he said, "Monsters defy death. Frankenstein, his creature, Dracula, the Cenobites, they all defy death, in which case I'm definitely a monster."
Going back many years, I remember having the living daylight scared out of me by a certain set of films. Most of them starting with the name Hell, first one being Hellraiser. So when our next guest stumbled across our email, I had to jump at the chance to interview him. I'm very pleased to welcome to Shout Out the lovely Nicholas Vince. Nick, welcome to Shout Out.
Andy, lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you for scaring me all those years ago.
I know it's always a weird conversation when people walk up to you and just say, she terrified me as a child. Firstly, I always think, why were you watching this as a child? Where were your parents?
And it is funny when you watch them back now and where things have moved on, that they're not quite as scary as they were back then, because we got like 4K TV and all that. But back then they were, you know, real.
Yes, but what I find absolutely fascinating, and it's come out recently, and I think because of the Hulu reboot remake of Hellraiser that went on TV a year or so ago, that brought back interest to Hellraiser and to the original film. I was in Oxford last weekend at a screening of Hellraiser, and more than half of the audience had never seen Hellraiser before.
Wow.
So it's gaining, and people still say, yeah, no, I find it really creepy. But I think you're absolutely right. Whenever you revisit something.
But then, to be fair, you'd be hard pushed to know it was you with the makeup that they had you in, if I'm honest.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to talk to you about, because you've got a Blu-ray coming out that is not a documentary. What did we decide it was called?
It's called a drama documentary.
Yeah.
Because it's based on the one-man show that I did at the London Horror Festival back in 2019, where I basically brought together all my stories from behind Hellraiser and Nightbreed and Hellbound, about the three films that I did for Clive Barker, but also wanted to put it into the context of me as a child who loved monsters. I was that weird kid. I just loved monsters. You know, my first book out of the library with my junior reading card was The Golden Treasury of Myths and Legends. And it was the monsters I was interested in. And I just thought, yeah, this is kind of interesting, and wanted to explore more about those stories and really what we mean when we use the term monster and so on.
Do you think we still use it correctly today, the term monster?
I think it's bandied around so much. And I think this is one of the things I talk about at the very end of the film, is that, you know, people regard me as a monster, not just for the acting roles I've done, but the things I've done and said. I know, because they've told me. You know, I'm a human being and I get it wrong every so often. I think it's a short phrase that describes, it means I don't like you. I don't like what you're doing. And I think it can just be sometimes lazy as a way of describing people. But also I find it fascinating the way that politicians in particular will make a certain group out to be monstrous just so that they can sow fear in their own followers.
And it's interesting because that's one of the things you touch on in the movie as well, because it goes literally from the day you were born, right the way through. And I don't want to give it away for viewers, but you have a very clever way of going from being on stage to almost like you're coming into the mind of the person viewing it, or opening up your mind. It kind of flips between the two, doesn't it?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Because this was one of the things that we were very conscious of when I was discussing this with my co-producers, Stuart Spark and Paul Butler. And I first chatted over with them the idea, so how do we do this? And what we came up with was the space in the script. Those sections that are not on stage are just described as the space. And it is just somewhere other than, and you're absolutely right, this is what I wanted to do, because I mean, technically, in terms of a film, it means that you can actually use close-ups and mid-shots more effectively and just make that chatting more or less as we are now, you know, in the same way on a Zoom call you've got this kind of chat going on. I wanted to have that almost a conversation with the audience.
But because I was expecting, when it first started and you're on the stage, it was going to be a video of you on the stage. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really clever the way there were multiple parts in it where you come out of the stage and use the fact that you have the extra medium that you don't have on a stage for the viewer. So it makes the Blu-ray a lot different to the experience of being in the theatre. And I'm guessing that was on purpose, like you said.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things, I've mentioned this recently as well, is that I'd previously seen a filming of a really good, strong one-man show. And it was a very physical performance. So the director had kind of felt that all he could do was just put a camera in the audience. And I said, yeah, that's great. You get the physicality, but you film, you want to get in close. This is why we use close-ups and mid-shots. It's just so that you can become more intimate with the audience. Yes, thank you very much for that. It's good to know that.
It's interesting hearing you give it all the technical names. I haven't got a clue because we're obviously rating. Right. Okay. But it is a lot of different things in one film because, you dive into all kinds of things. Like, I mean, the big ones obviously are going to be the Hellraiser and all those films. I really want to talk to you about it, but I'm kind of scared of giving some of it away to the audience. But I had no idea of the story of how things like the makeup came about. And it's actually quite graphical, to be fair, how what happened in your real life influences the makeup that you end up in with the big teeth, isn't it?
Yes. I think it's interesting, isn't it? I, having gone through it, having sat down and edited it and trying to work out, again, ways of... And again, this is something I discussed with Stuart and Paul, the animation of what was going on. I was trying to say, like, okay, I need the audience to understand how it was and how it felt, but I don't want to gross them out so much they look away. There was another review did come out where somebody said that, she started it with warnings, with trigger warnings, just saying there are scenes in this movie which will upset people. And for me, because I'm so close to it, my God, I forget just how difficult it is for some people to watch some of these things. And I think it's going to be a certain minority of people who are just really get it. But again, it was just that thing of like, how do I show it without going over the top, without making it too gross?
But of course, there's also the element, some people will have been scared to death actually having seen Hellraiser in the first place, so we just remember that being scary because we were watching it and we're like, that was a really scary character, and then you explain how that character came around and you're like, that kind of makes it worse.
Well, thank you, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, is just like, just because it is so personal to me. And I wanted this story out there just so that people understand what we go through. And it's not like other actors don't go through really, really tough times. I was watching, funnily enough, going back to the Hulu reboot, what the actor, whose name entirely escapes me, who plays Chatterer in the reboot, whereas there's one thing we talk about, and I talk about in the film, is how the chattering of the teeth was done. Well, in the remake, they insisted on having a mechanic. It was motors that actually did the chattering of the teeth because they wanted to be able to. And I think, because we can't have the poor actor chattering his teeth like that. He's not going to be able to do that for too long. As it turned out, it was the most uncomfortable makeup. I suspect in many ways it was more uncomfortable for him than it was for me. Because, of course, if you think about it, he's wearing motors on his face and on his head and all that extra weight. And so on. So, yes.
I mean, it didn't sound pleasant for you. I seem to remember there being condoms and super glue in there at some point. And I can't imagine that going up into my eyes. I'm not even 100% sure you could actually do that if you tried to redo it again today.
No. That's really, oddly enough, I remember talking to Jeff Portis, who's the guy... one of the partners, the lead of Image Animation, the guy, the studio that did all the makeup on Hellraiser and Hellbound and Nightbreed. And he said, he mentioned in passing a few years back, he said, we wouldn't do that today, which is like, no, you don't do that to people anymore. And it's like, oh, good. I think that's really good idea.
Including, I believe, one costume, they actually put LEDs in your eyes so you couldn't see a thing.
Yeah, because I do like that. Because literally they just said, no, you know, you did so well on Hellraiser. Didn't think you'd mind. Thanks, guys. I don't mind what you did. It's the timing of telling me you'd done it more than anything else. I'm about to kind of try and do this, and you've just, yeah, okay.
I sound like I'm giving a lot away. I'm not. You need to watch the Blu-ray. Nick goes into an awful lot of detail about a lot of it. And, of course, because a big part of it is the Hellraiser series of films. Mm-hmm. There's quite a bit of it in there. But there's also a lot of other stuff in it, too, because it's personal. It's about you as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting, especially when you hit the part about coming out and the AIDS crisis at the time, because it was a generation before me, but I saw a lot of the effects. And you were quite vocal about Thatcherism and the bringing in of Section 28, which is one of the things that I really, really hate in my past, because it really ruined my experience at school and coming out and coming to terms with being gay. It was quite interesting for me hearing you as a generation above that was campaigning against it, having come out of school. I mean, I got the impression it was quite a tough time.
It was extraordinary. I mean, there was so much fear around. And I wasn't sure whether or not to include all this stuff. And I'm glad I did. It was very much an integral part of the original stage show. And as we talk about monsters and describing people as monsters, I've described Margaret Thatcher as a monster because it was the prime aspect, you know, prime example of what I was talking about before. Pick on a minority in society, demonize them, show that you're fighting the demons or the monsters or however you want to describe them. And we see it today with transphobia and, you know, it's the same old story. It's always the same old story. I think, yes, I wanted to include it, and I wanted to kind of show examples of just how bad it was, so people really truly felt what it was like at that side. Because I think it's important that we talk as, I don't want to use the word victim because that's disempowering. I think those who are attacked, the voice of those who are attacked, seeing it from their perspective, but also seeing it kind of, although I do not tend to present the other side of the argument at all, because I don't believe in it. But I think it is important that we keep on talking sometimes as though giving voice to the voiceless.
Well, and also there's an element of making sure our history isn't lost.
Yes,
because if you talk to the younger generations, because they're used to equal marriage, they're used to things like PEP and PrEP and HIV not being as much of a worry as it was. But at this time that you're talking about, I mean, AIDS was actually killing people. There's a whole swathe of the gay male community above me that literally is missing because they all unfortunately died.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think what it is that the... And I recommend a book by Jill Nulder, who I was at drama school with, and who is actually very much involved in supporting people who are dying. I didn't get involved. I was living outside London and didn't manage to distance myself from a lot of vulnerability to the AIDS pandemic. And the reason, again, you're talking about the generation above and people not being aware today, again, I didn't want it to come across as, we had it tough, you know, back in my day, it was really, really tough. You don't know you're born.
No, I don't think it came across like that. It just came across as a personal experience, and it was what you actually went through, and you're telling a genuine, honest account of what happened. I didn't feel like you were lecturing anyone, if I'm honest.
Good. Thank you. That's very much what I was wanting to do. And I was like, the reason, again, for including is it's a warning. It's not a... It's just, these are the things to look out for. These are the things that to be aware of, and just be thinking about these things. When younger people see this, and I have watched it in cinemas and screenings with younger people, and they do respond very well to the whole thing. I think it's, yes, thank you. I think I achieved what I intended to do in that case.
Yeah, sure. We're literally scraping the surface because of time. There is a lot in it. It's literally the story of your life and the day you were born. And I'm just touching on a couple of things. But if any of it interests you, Blu-ray's coming out soon, isn't it? How do people find out more about it?
Okay, so the Blu-ray is officially released on October 31st, naturally. It is available from darkrifthorror.com. You can pre-order now. It comes in two versions, one with the signature and the number on it. That's and for an extra fiver dedication, I'll write what you want me to write. No big long essays, please. but yeah, so that's all available from darkrifthorror.com now.
Cool, brilliant. I've got to ask one more question because I know it's one that fans will ask. Will they ever see you in that type of makeup in a horror film again?
It's interesting. I'll probably never play Chatterer again. I've put on so much weight. Would I ever wear prosthetic makeup again? Yes, as long as I can keep my beard. it takes a while to grow. I'll quite happily. I'd love to actually. I'd really like to wear proper prosthetic makeup again because it's a really interesting experience as an actor.
So we might see you in another horror again in the future. We never know.
Yes, yeah. In fact, there are a couple of films coming out which I should give a shout out to. He Sees You When You're Sleeping. That should have a trailer drop today, the day we're recording, Monday, on Fangoria website. And there's another one called Anvent, which premieres at Fright Fest at the beginning of November, 1st of November. So there are a couple of, without prosthetic makeup, I hasten to add.
Cool, brilliant. Well, what we'll do, we'll make sure we get the links up for the Blu-ray on our website when it goes up as well. But now, it's been absolutely phenomenal to talk to you. Listeners, Nicholas, Vince?
Andy, thank you very much indeed. Hi, Nicholas Vince here. You are listening to Shout Out Radio.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
This is Shadow News from Transylvania. Welcome along.
Left of Centre magazine 19 reports that Van family with a trans youngster are far happier in their new possibly haunted house than in their previous home in a state with transphobic laws. Last October, the Jacksons fled from their Kansas City, Missouri home in search of a safe community for trans kids like their 16-year-old youngster Avery. But Avery was the first to spot it. They were all sitting in one of the ranch's four bedrooms when the light turned off. The switch actually flipped. The overactive light switch was not run off. The lights in the house continued to turn on and off in the presence of all the family members, the switch flipping up and down on its own. Doors and cabinets open and close by themselves without the presence of a draft. There is a knocking throughout the house in places that no one in the family can reach. Over the course of the last year, the family has come to the obvious conclusion that they are looming over the ghost. They have started to call the ghost Dave. They think of Dave like they do trans kids, someone who is stuck in a place, not trying to bother anyone, just trying to be. In Avery's mind, Dave is a friend, because Dave doesn't care if Avery is trans or not.
Wonderful. The BBC News Channel and BBC Radio Solent report that a lesbian poet and writer who lived openly gay in a different era to our own is to be honoured with a statue in the beautiful town of Dorchester. Sylvia Townsend Warner lived in Dorset with her partner poet Valentine Ackland at a time when same-sex relationships defied societal expectations. The sculpture planned for Dorchester's main shopping street will be the first of a non-royal woman in the county town. In the result of a campaign led by Charity Visible Women UK, which is calling for more representation of women in public art, Townsend Varner, who lived from 1893 to 1978, was a prolific writer whose works included Lolly Willows, The Corner That Held Them, and Kingdoms of Elfin. The finished statue will be installed outside Gould's department store. Author Tracy Chevalier, who is a patron of Visible Women UK, said, "When people think of Dorset writers, they tend to think of men. Thomas Hardy and the poet William Barnes, that's why I'm so delighted that there is going to be a statue of Townsend Varner, who spent most of her life in Dorset."
Member Online, the voice of LGBTQIA South Africa, reports that Drag Race is coming to African television sets. World of Wanda, the production powerhouse behind the hit series, dropped the news at the prestigious MIPCOM event in Cannes on Monday. Africa's queens are finally getting their chance to shine in the first ever edition of the show on the continent. The announcement promised a brand new cast of queens sashaying onto the main stage, bringing their unique style, talent and culture to the world.
Fans of gay comedy had a chance to roll with laughter on Saturday night, 27th October, when the Dave Television Channel and its subsidiary Deja Vu broadcast Pride live at the Apollo. First transmitted last summer, the assembly of LGBTQIA plus funny people included Tom Allen, Stephen K. Amos, Jen Brister, Al Porter, Julian Clary, Susie Ruffle and Gina Yosher. Well done to the Dave Network for transmitting this fantastic slice of out and proud comedy.
BBC Radio 4 reports that lesbian icon and comic stand-up Sue Perkins will be presenting a new series on BBC Two television in the new year. Called Chess Masters, the programme will be the first popular entertainment chess programme aired by public service television in the United Kingdom since the 1980s. Amateur players will compete for a coveted prize and the title of Chess Masters Champion.
And finally, our live broadcast on Thursday evening this week coincides with All Hallows Eve, or Halloween, an ancient European festival that closed off the harvest season and indeed the year. Many LGBTQI plus people have adopted the festival as a special time for parties and social gatherings, for comparing dressing up and what historians call cavalry, subverting the usual order of things as medieval society. Many people were partying this weekend. On this special night of the year, Wiccan medium Jasmine Moonsong has some thoughts to share. She says, "The beginning of the Celtic New Year, summer is over. The harvest has been gathered and the leaves are falling from the trees as we head into the dark time of the year. It's a time to finish anything that you need to and get ready to begin anew. Think about what you want when you begin anew."
And that concludes your slice of spooky, yet we hope still relevant news for Halloween. Normal news service will be resumed next week. In the meantime, why not check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Ezra Peregrine.
And Terry Starr.
Mama's gonna buy you a diamond ring.
Shout out
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Whether you're rich or parking cars, your fate is written in the stars. You don't want to look like
dope, so please listen close for your horoscope.
And now, live from her latest paranormal investigation at an 18th century torture chamber beneath the River Mersey, we present the world's top psychic medium, Deborah O'Carmer.
Cancer, Norman Bates from Psycho. Cancer, the mother of all zodiacs, known for their nurturing tendencies, you typically have a strong attachment to family and the home. You can see where I'm going with this one, because, you know, Norman Bates has a soft, sweet voice of a Cancer with all the mummy issues to match. He seems like a gentle person, but Cancerians are secretive. They value privacy and keep their issues to themselves, like locked in another building, dressed up as a dead woman in their clothing. You know, that private. You both have a difficult time dealing with emotions, which leads to his murderous activity. He does adapt easily to his surroundings, though, such as wearing the clothes of his victims. So, let's be less murderous this month, eh, Cancerians? Libra, you are Billy Loomis and Stu Masher from Scream. You can be a bit of a jokester who doesn't always know when to take things seriously, so naturally you should be represented by the villain of one of these funniest thrillers ever. Tongue twister there. The twins who are perpetually looking for their other half, much like you and your love life. At worst, you can be two-faced and romantically flighty, and Billy lies through his teeth the entire movie, playing the role of Sydney's boyfriend while gleefully destroying her life. Meanwhile, Stu is simply motivated by, I don't know, peer pressure. Be less fake this month. People like you for you, and they keep you around because you're fun. Scorpio, Annie Wilkes from Misery. Possessive, obsessive, emotional. Notices everything. Not going to let you leave this bed. Annie is definitely, sorry, a Scorpio. A plan to trap Paul into rewriting her favourite fantasy novels to her liking indicates a methodical mind and a capacity to think ahead, while her bursts of rage suggest a Scorpio's volatile emotional state. Under normal circumstances, most Scorpios have a skill for hiding their inner feelings from the outside world when upset. But when they blow up, they really blow up. Like, I don't know, bash your legs in, blow up maybe? Sagittarius, Jigsaw from Saw. Do you want to play a game? Nothing frustrates a Saggy more than boredom. You're vibrant. You're passionate. So it makes sense that they are represented by Jigsaw, a villain who despises hypocrisy and forces his victims to face the question of what they're willing to sacrifice in order to live. Saggies encourage the people around them to take advantage of what life has to offer. New experiences, friendships, travel. A Sagittarius may not have the sadism within them to pull off a reverse bear trap, obviously, but you better believe that the victims who survive Jigsaw's custom designed L leave with a little more appreciation for the world they have at their fingertips, which is the essence of Saggy's spirit. Capricorn, Patrick Bateman from Oh Yes, American Psycho. Capricorns are known for their ambition in the workplace. They're planners, they're go-getters who know how to get what they want, obviously, because they're go-getters. At times, this can make them calculating and odd. Patrick Bateman represents the Capricorn qualities of ruthless ambition, dedication to self-improvement, and commitment to steady routines to improve their life. Cough, shower scene. They have a keen eye for detail, and their high standards can make them judgmental. Yet the person they are is always the person that is most critical of themselves, and they hate nothing more than workplace disappointment. Oh my God, it even has a watermark. And last but definitely not least, Leo Pennywise. Okay, are you ready, Leo? The costuming, the hair, the makeup, the legacy, the drama of it all, darling. No one ever said that Leos ain't making a scene, and you're literally spending your entire life being centre stage. As a clown, Pennywise is a bomb performer, and Leo is a sign closely associated with self-expression, creativity, and individualism. Pennywise makes sure to achieve the maximum terror by altering his persona to the personality's specific fears of each child he terrorises, aren't they? This is not a one-size-fits-all villain. Leo knows how to play to their audience, even if playing is actually just haunting them. Just stay away from all my makeup, paper boats and drains, eh? So, it's been great to be back, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this spooky-wooky Halloween horoscope special. And for now, I have been Deborah O'Kammer.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
November 27th.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That being Bloody Mary. That's Maz Dem's version, which, if you know the original, was a sped up version of the original by Lady Gaga. Became a huge TikTok one, including even by Lady Gaga. She even did the dance too, but it originates from a remix of Wednesday.
I don't know who Lady Gaga is. I know who Lady Gaga is.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know how you two managed to do that news, you know.
Well, we just had...
Terry was so serious that it was very hard.
Well,
you
just
know?
Had a phone call from the Chancellor of Germany.
Complaining.
Yeah. One in their camp with a lisp. German newsreader back.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to be very silly with my voice, but when Terry was so serious with his,
well, was he? Thought, because oof. I mean, I'm sure the audience could hear means deck in the background.
Oh goodness me, that was so funny.
You were cackling, I was just laughing.
Amen, cackle. Now, of course, as well as Halloween, we ought to say Happy Diwali as well to everybody, because it's Diwali this weekend.
Yeah.
So many people will be celebrating that, especially in major cities with big Hindu and Sikh populations.
Yeah, yes. Some of our neighbours are decked the halls.
Already. Celebration of light, I believe.
It's the Festival of Light, that's
So, of course, Halloween, which is when we celebrate, dates all the way back to Samhain.
It does indeed.
Very old festival.
Very ancient festival as well. Yes.
Older than Steph, I think.
Well, we used to do nearly. But we used to do things like they used to light bonfires outside to ward off the spirits.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would go and let the fire go out in their hearth in the house, and they would go and take a burning ember to relight it from the bonfire to take away the spirits, because they've been shown away by the bonfire. Yeah. Mm. So the